Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Toy Department time, boys and girls. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
It's good to be back in the comfy confines of this studio with like a microphone and a board in front of me. Feeling much more stable today.
That's good, I guess.
You know, I was gonna.
I mean, you know, for those of you who are not caught up, our other podcasts are still good.
They're all still good. Yeah, I'm not saying don't listen to those. Just say it. It's you know, I'm in here. I'm focused. I'm ready to go. I was about to break your balls for you know, because we had to delay the start of this for your nanny to arrive.
Yeah, except actually, we delayed the start of this ultimately because you had stuff to do.
Yeah, that also turned out to be that, and also, you know. I had a, you know, my parents had live-in child care help when they were roughly your age and, you know, not super rich. So it would be super hypocritical of me to make jokes, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't live here, but we had to have someone take care of our child while we're at work. We blatantly cannot afford her and are looking to share her. So if you live in Berkeley or Oakland and you're looking to share a nanny for, you know, baby in the range of 3 months old, have we got a deal for you?
Man, you got adult problems, you know?
Yeah, I sure do.
Remember, it's like, it's one of those things that I was thinking about this. It's like when you are, you know, like toddler age, like any adult might as well be like 50, right? Like your parents sure. Definitely seem like old as can be, but you know, you realize now that like, you know, my parents were way younger than me at that point when it seemed like they were, you know, fully grown adults that knew everything about the world, right?
Yeah. Totally. I remember my dad's 40th birthday quite clearly as, man, like, that's it for him.
Yep.
He's old now. He's as old as you can be now. Well, that's the end.
I've got news for you.
I'm a couple years away now, so good times.
Yeah. It probably didn't help that my dad, you know, started balding in his early 20s. So, you know, he always kind of looked like a dad.
Uh-huh, totally.
All right, let's get to culture, because we got a lot of that this week. We went to the movies, right? We made it out.
Oh, yeah.
And saw Good Boys. Which I found to be a delightful little romp. I feel like romp would be the appropriate word for Good Boys. How about you?
I think that sounds about right. It was fun. It was super sweet. There were a lot of laughs. And I have no complaints.
Yeah. You know, with the R rating and the you know, the marketing was heavy on Seth Rogen, who's, you know, not in this movie at all, but, you know, produced it. I was kind of expecting a raunchy comedy going in, and I would say, like, the movie doesn't flinch from being blue, but I think maybe edgy is a much better word for what it is, you know what I mean? Like, because it's, you know, it is thoughtful at times and sweet at times and cheerful at times, but also, like, it can get kind of in the mud, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a little dirty, but it's, like, it's not... I don't know. I guess I was expecting something more. It didn't get anywhere near offensive for me.
Oh, you? Yeah. It's never offensive. No. Offensive would not be. But I, you know, I don't know. Like, I thought there might be nudity or, and there definitely are, like, sex jokes. You know what I mean? But it's all pretty appropriate, you know, for a movie that's sort of led by, I don't know, what are they, like, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds?
Yeah, but it's, what's the right, I don't know. It's just it wasn't like they got into situation, but none of the kids did anything weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like it was like there was a dramatic irony in that it was funny because we knew what was going on and they mostly didn't. You know,
right? I actually think that device really worked. You know what I mean?
Yes, like, totally.
Having them, you know, sort of this like preteen point of view where they're, you know, they play the naivety for laughs a lot.
Yeah.
But I always feel like the movie was pretty respectful of them as people and as like fully formed humans, like fully formed humans is the wrong word, but like fully formed characters who are, you know, trying to forge their own identities in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, this edgy thing to me, and I'm imagining that we will talk about this later when we get into The Boys. I do feel like there is something of a through line that runs through the various and now sort of many Seth Rogen like productions, you know, whether it's this or Preacher or I don't know, something like Until the End of the what was that the End of the World movie that they all
yeah
you know what I mean you know what I'm talking about
and I think it was The End of the World, right?
Maybe it's just the End of the World. Yeah. I don't know. It's not the end of the fucking world, right? That's a whole
no,
show,
that's
yeah.
the TV show.
But anyway, regardless, the many, many Seth Rogen projects, like they're pretty different. Like those shows that we mentioned are, you know, like you wouldn't say, oh, that's the same show or the same movie, but like there's something spiritually similar that they share, like a vibe or an attitude, you know?
Yeah, an aesthetic, yeah.
Yeah, like there's a certain tonal like bite to them, and I think I really enjoy that. I think it's sort of a credit to him and his production partner, whose name is escaping
Evan
right
Goldberg.
Now.
Yeah, and Goldberg. And I also appreciate their. I mean, we have the same interest when it comes to entertainment, which you know is like violence and comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
Those are my primary entertainment interests, I would say. And I think Seth Rogen might say the same.
Yeah, that's fair. Did you see, I retweeted this the other day. And look, it's not, I don't think it's news to anybody. But for me, like, actually seeing it, like, spelled out in print, like, the list of the, like, 10 highest grossing movies so far this year.
Uh-huh. Are they not all superhero-y?
Well, yeah. All right. So it's number one comic book adaptation, remake of animated movie, comic book adaptation, animated movie part four, comic book adaptation, remake of animated movie, Us, uh-huh. Action movie part three, animated movie part three, animated movie part two. That's your top 10.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just it is stark. When you see it that way, like that, honestly, like just the even the just like the hey, here's a little comedy, you know, about three people or three children. You know what I mean? Like there, it just feels like there's less of these movies getting made these days. And I'm just glad to like be able to go to the theater and just see a movie that's about people that doesn't involve anyone wearing tights or being uh-huh. drawn. That's like a good time. You know what I mean?
Agreed. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, and I'm glad that it seems to be doing pretty well, box office-wise.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah. Like, you probably can't take your 12-year-old, but you almost can.
Yeah. you know, one thing I also really enjoyed, I thought Will Forte delivered, like, a heat check performance in this movie.
He was great.
I mean? Like he,
yep.
It, I don't know. He's probably in it for 10 minutes total.
Sure,
but that scene where he's like, you know, where he catches his son on the computer, is just is really amazing. Really, I enjoyed Will Forte around. I feel like I don't see him that much anymore. I guess he's doing stuff, and I'm just not watching it.
Is he? I mean, yeah, he's doing the TV show. I guess right.
Yeah,
still,
I think so. I don't know.
Still on.
That's what I said. I'm like, I'm not keeping up with old Will.
Yeah. He does. He pops up in these little sort of character roles, though, here and there, and he's always pretty good.
He is always pretty good. I think MacGruber, by the way, is really underrated. I don't know if we've ever talked about that.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen the movie MacGruber? It's running a lot on cable right now. I would definitely recommend.
Here's the problem with that. I have no connection to MacGruber on Saturday Night Live. I don't really think it's a funny sketch. I don't really like Saturday Night Live, as you know.
Yeah, fair enough. I would say I wouldn't worry about that so much because it's not. They're not do. I mean, obviously, it's based on the sketch, but they're not really doing the sketch. It's kind of a whole other thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Just check it out if you get a chance. He also did that National Lampoon movie that we talked about at some point.
Yes, he was good in that.
Yeah, he was good in that. The only other thing I would add is I think it's going to be a really great cable movie. It's the kind of movie that you can jump into pretty much at any point. You can jump out of it at any point because it's really, you know, like a lot of comedies. It's a series of set pieces, you know, with some sort of stuff in the middle. So I think it's going to be highly rewatchable, as they would say at The Ringer.
All right.
Yeah.
I might just take your word for that, but we'll see.
Yeah, you disagree on that? I'm not talking about MacGruber. I'm talking about Good Boys again.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes, in that case, I do agree. Yeah. I strongly agree. Because, yeah, there's a bunch of different, just you could almost watch any single scene and enjoy it as a short film.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not too hard to, like, sort of figure out who everyone is if you came in 45 minutes into the movie, you know what I mean?
No, this is not complicated or groundbreaking, really. Like, a lot of the advertisement around it was built as, like, you've never seen kids like this. And that's not really true. There may never have been a movie that specifically focuses on this, but more than, like, wildly original, it's just really well made and funny and cute.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, like, if I was fact-checking that claim, I don't think I would give it a Pinocchio. You know what I mean?
No, but it's a little misleading, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Not in a sinister way, but, you know, you have seen a lot of this type of stuff before. Maybe not, again, maybe not a whole movie of and about it, but a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, like, oh my God, it's the most original thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I also would say that I don't know that I've seen a movie about people this young that goes quite this far. And
correct.
It, you know, still maintains that respect. So
totally. It's not a copycat or anything. All I'm saying is what's more noteworthy about this movie than originality or, you know, groundbreaking child humor is that it's really excellently executed.
Correct. All right, should we move on to the other Seth Rogen production? Because you finished The Boys this week.
Yes.
I'm gonna let you kind of roll, and I'll jump in because I finished The Boys, but now I finished it a little bit of a while ago. So I kind of want to get your take, and I'll bounce off of that.
Okay. I really liked this show. I think this was, if we're talking about originality in Seth Rogen productions, here we go. Like, we've seen dark superheroes, but this is more than that. This presents superheroism as almost like an allegory for corporate America.
Yeah.
I mean, not just an allegory, because obviously the superheroes are run by a corporation, but they explore a lot of those issues, sexual assault, emotionally violent corporate culture, the influence of money in government.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't want to – I'm going to say this, and I don't want to get people to think I'm getting too carried away here, but like I would expect that you would like it because it definitely has some of the spirit of like Deadpool, you know, in that it's kind of like,
yes,
deadpan and a little bit meta about the superhero experience. But I think it also has a little bit of the spirit of The Wire in it. You know what I mean? In terms of like it's kind of taking this sort of milieu to branch out into sort of all these levels. And you're talking about, you know, corporate America and you know, the relationship between military and government and lobbyists, and it, like, I think it actually considers these things. Now, look, it's not, it's certainly not gritty and real like The Wire is. I'm not trying to say it's The Wire, but it has some of that spirit, and I do think it is trying to do a lot of stuff. And I also think all that execution is really, it's really well done, and it's, you know, it packs a lot of action. Like, if you're watching this because you like superhero shows, like, you're not going to be disappointed because nothing happens. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, it literally has everything. It has, you know, superhero violence. It has some kind of extreme. This is just on my mind because he made a movie recently, but like, almost Tarantino-esque sort of gore to it. It has comedy. It has, I think, really thoughtful cultural criticism behind it. You know, you can choose to engage with that or not, but it is there for sure.
Yep.
And
quite a bit of sexual deviance as well.
Yeah. But also, I think some really great acting. I mean, I don't care about Carl Urban, but I think he's great in this. You know, I think this is the most and best Elizabeth Shue I've seen since The Babysitter's Club. That's an exaggeration, but still.
Yeah. You mean Adventures in Babysitting? Or was she also in The Babysitter's Club?
I meant Adventures in Babysitting. Okay, sorry. I should have said The Saint. But anyway, I really, and the more I think about it, the more I liked it. And I'm very excited that I think they set up what could be an interesting season two.
Yeah. All right. So do you want to go into spoiler alert territory?
I think we ought to.
All right. So this is, you know, if you're still with us on this and you haven't finished the show, like, this is definitely your chance to drop out.
This is why I put times in the descriptions. Yeah. So you can jump ahead to the next topic if you so desire.
How did you feel about the twist at the end with, you know, Elizabeth Shue getting nuked there, essentially?
That was shocking. I was less shocked by his wife still being alive with Homelander's baby.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought about that until Elizabeth Shue and the doctor told the lie about the baby killing her and dying, essentially. And then I was like, you know, why even create this if the baby's not actually alive?
Right.
And so
that's good thinking by you, because I didn't see that coming, and then when it happened, I'm like, oh man, I should have saw that coming.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like coincidence more than anything, but that did not shock me. Him executing Elizabeth Shue suddenly and then bringing Carl Urban to see the baby, that did surprise me. I thought the Elizabeth Shue gambit was gonna work. And, you know, end of Homelander sort of a deal. And then if there was a season two, it would be about, like, what's next in the world, yeah. You know? They got these superhero terrorists out there, for God's sakes. But this is interesting, man, because now what do you do? You can't stop this guy, Homelander. I mean, it's a fascinating thought experiment.
Yeah, I 100%. Like, that's the, like, my jaw dropped when that happened, because I just – you know, I mean, I think they've done a really good job of setting up the intense strangeness and intimacy of Madeline and Homelander's relationship. You know what I mean? And you really do believe that, like, this is his one true weakness, the thing that he can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, he looks her in the eye and it just boom. And I was like, whoa. And then I immediately thought about, you know, what you said of, like, well, you know, if he's going to do that to her, like, what chance does Billy Butcher have to walk out of that room? You know what I mean?
Right. Or I guess, you know, it's not in the end, he obviously saves him from that room. But, like, what chance does anyone have to stop the world from being whatever Homelander wants it to be at this point?
Yeah. Look, I mean,
and like, obviously the, like, superhero gone bad thing has been done 1,000 different ways, but this feels different to me in its sincerity.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Though the other entertainment that has done that, it's always just a setup for, you know, a conquering hero who's always the protagonist. And in this case, like, look, man, you understand Billy Butcher's perspective, but I wouldn't call him a protagonist exactly. He's certainly not someone you feel totally good about. He's done some messed up stuff that we've seen. Even Huey. Like, if there's anybody who's might be okay in this, it's Starlight. But for the most part, like, these people are all compromised morally.
Yeah. By the way, I think Huey is a great character. We talked a little bit about this, I think, when we first talked about it. Like, the Huey-Starlight relationship should be horrible. And but yet I'm all in on it. Like, I ship that couple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And even there was a moment at the park when she ultimately walks away from him when I'm like, is it really going to be this easy for him to get her back or whatever? And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
But then it kind of was, but it didn't bother me by the time it happened somehow.
Yeah. I feel like we should also mention, like, there are some really great, supporting players or great people that pop up as guest stars. I think Jennifer Esposito as the CIA agent is really good. Yep. Haley Joel Osment, pops up in a few episodes and is excellent.
He was fantastic, I thought.
He's really kind of figured out a place to sort of play off his, like, you know, child star self, which I think is great.
Well, I think what's beautiful about it is he has found this, like, beautiful, happy medium where he can sort of, he's not afraid to reference it and laugh about it, but it hasn't dominated his opportunities or, you know, overshadowed his ability to do great work now, because he's been in some really interesting stuff and done a really interesting job, yeah, I would say.
I agree. Simon Pegg as Hugh's dad is great, and it's great to see him. Giancarlo Esposito pops up at some point. I have a feeling we're going to see more of him as well.
I think he figures to be sort of the Elizabeth Shue, I'm the bad replacement for next season, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's a real good possibility. By the way, did you know, this is, you know, because I'm on the Wikipedia page of this show, and I literally just discovered this, that the guy that plays Hugh is the son of Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid.
No kidding.
Yeah, Jack Quaid is his name.
You know, I think I did know his name was Jack Quaid, but it never occurred to me that he would be the Spawn. That makes sense, though.
Yeah, and now that you see him, like, he looks like if you took one of them and you know, the two of them and put him in one of those baby-making apps or whatever, like,
Come out looking. He kind of looks like an interesting combination of the two, for sure.
So, yeah, hey, thank you, Wikipedia, for that.
Right on, man.
So, yeah, I'm fired up for this show. Like, if they dropped 8 more of these next week, I'd probably binge them real quick. So I'd hope that they get to more soon. I have no idea, because, you know, Netflix is pretty hoary about their data. I feel like no one really asked Amazon who's watching their shows.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know.
So I have no idea if this is actually, you know what? Amazon renewed it for a second season ahead of its premiere. So.
Great.
So we know we'll at least get a second.
Well, season. I understand why, because I really thought it was excellent. I have one quick theory I want to throw at you before we move on. I was thinking about this when you were talking. During this conversation, party to the idea that this manages to include, like, the relationship between Starlight and Huey that, in a lot of sort of maybe 90s or early 2000s versions of this show, is the part where you're like, all right, it kind of makes you sick and it's corny and bad.
Yeah.
I feel like those movies and shows that did that stuff in that time, I realize I'm saying this and that a lot, but hopefully I'm making sense. They were made by people of an older demographic trying to, like, figure out, oh, this is what the kids are looking for. But we can't make a movie without a love story, so we'll just throw this in.
Yeah.
And now it's actually the kids who were watching that stuff and going, ugh, this stupid love story, who are making the stuff. And I feel like Seth Rogen knows how to avoid those pitfalls. And that's part of, I think, what makes him so good at this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm looking now at the list of writers, you know, and it's not really, you know, names that I know. Not that there are a ton of famous TV writers.
Sure. But even if it's just like the aesthetic that other writers have now, you know, because I think you could say the same sort of thing about a movie like Knocked Up or Superbad.
Yeah, I would say that's true. And
so
like
maybe
I said,
it's really an Apatow aesthetic, but Superbad is Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, certainly.
Yeah, man, that Apatow comedy tree. it really is something.
Prolific, man.
Indeed. All right. What was the other thing we watched this week? Help me out here.
Righteous Gemstones?
Yeah, that's it. All right. Righteous Gemstones. I don't know. How can you not like this show? Like if you're at all in on Danny McBride, I feel like you're going to be in on this show, right?
I would think so. It's just kind of Danny McBride taken up to like 23, because he passed 11 a long time ago. But this is even more sort of dark than even like Eastbound and Down or something, I think. It gets dark quickly, and like, I mean, okay, I guess let's not spoil the end of the premiere just yet, but like, this is not a light comedy. It's a super dark comedy, and it's got all the sort of both slapstick and, I don't know, what's the right word? Sarcastic humor of the Danny McBride oeuvre.
Yeah, I think it's really well cast, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, Adam Devine is perfect, and John Goodman is always great.
Yeah, John Goodman is great in everything, but I think this is a really great role you know, for him to just sort of play off of. And in the same way, like, I mean, look, obviously created it for himself, but like this character, like Danny McBride doesn't have to stretch a lot to be on 23. You know what I mean? Like it's all appropriate for the kind of guy that he's playing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think, you know, I think for them to come up with this was a great idea.
I mean, in some ways, hasn't he always been playing an evangelical preacher in, like, all the characters he's played?
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, I think a lot of the characters he's played have not really been religious in any way, but, like, other than that, yes. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think this guy is particularly religious, to be honest with you.
They all have the self-awareness of an evangelical preacher. yes, you do make a pretty good argument for that.
They all like to talk like evangelical preachers. I mean, this is on brand deeply from a character perspective. You know, these sort of aloof, oblivious, cartoonish, and deeply flawed people.
Yeah, I think deeply flawed is charitable. Do you know, I'm interested, like, are all the episodes going to be, like, in the 60-minute range? Because I was definitely expecting, you know, McBride 30-minute kind of comedy.
Right. I assume they're all the same length, but I do not know.
The episode is only, or the season's only 6 episodes, so.
I'm guessing they're all an hour, but I didn't actually look it up or anything.
Because it does, you're right, like, I mean, I think all of his work has been, you know, had a certain darkness to it. But I think this one fits almost, I wouldn't call it a drama, But
no.
It's definitely more dramedy, I think, than maybe some of the other shows that he's done.
Yeah.
It's darker, you know?
Yeah. Certainly, it got darker quicker. I mean, if you really think about some of Eastbound and Down, I don't know that...
Yeah, you know what? Vice Principals got pretty damn dark, too.
Yeah, it all gets dark. But this was like... You know, those almost kind of fool you for a second. And this is just like, heads up, we're diving.
Yeah.
Down we go into the rabbit hole of like violence and horror, but also hilariously, you know.
I really, and I, you know, I tend to like, I like some of these scenes, but I really enjoyed the, or some of these kinds of scenes rather, but I really enjoyed the scene of, you know, the meeting in the church with the other local pastors.
Oh, man.
You know, Goodman just kind of tour de force, like, basically, like, threatens without actually, you know, with a smile on his face the entire time. Yeah.
And then at the very end, Danny McBride is like, cool, so we're done here? Because I really got some stuff to do.
Yes.
It's hilarious. And I mean, even the and I think we'll that was already a slight spoiler. Slight more spoiler.
He did in fact really have some stuff to do. Yeah.
That was- he did. And like the end, like I was laughing when they ran those people over and murdered them, but they definitely ran over some people and murdered them a lot. They ran them over a lot.
Yeah. They were very clearly like crash test dummy dolls, you know, which I sort of enjoyed. Like they made no real attempt to hide it, but like the way that they ran them over was horrifying and hysterical at the same time.
Which honestly, that is the Danny McBride aesthetic.
Yeah.
Horrifying and hilarious.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I hope there's another one of those moments in every episode. and you know the other thing that I wanted to mention I really, really kind of like about the McBride oeuvre? You know, they shoot all of these in South Carolina. And, you know, I think Eastbound and Down... I forget where that one took place. I think it was North Carolina. In fact, I think Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals were both supposed to be North Carolina or whatever. But
that sounds right.
I do feel like you were seeing a part of the world or a part of the country and a part of the culture that you don't always see a ton on television when you watch his shows. And I like that vibe a little bit.
Yeah, I'm into that. I don't know that it's the most flattering portrayal.
No, it's not. But, you know what I mean? But it's a different kind of like, yeah. I feel like, I don't know, a lot of times you have a show that's like set in the South and it's, you know, it has maybe a sharp objects vibe. I know that was Missouri technically, but, you know,
right.
Or a True Detective kind of vibe where, you know what I mean? Where it's like a certain vision of the South that is not on. You know, it's not based in reality, but that's not a lot of people South. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, yeah, like, I don't know. I like seeing that little bit of representation because, you know, there's a million things that take place in New York and L.A.
Indeed. Don't need more of that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you got anything else to add or do you want to talk about the Mindhunter season 2?
Let's talk about the Mindhunter season 2.
Yeah. I'm glad this show is on television. I'm glad that somebody let David Fincher make a TV show. I'm glad that David Fincher is kind of venturing into Zodiac territory.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he does that dark serial killer. Let's really get into the psychology and, you know, drudgery of criminal pursuit and casework. And then on top of that, you know, like throwing in, are you enjoying the device of like sort of how many famous serial killers are involved in this particular season? Because season one, it was a lot more, I mean, they were talking to actual killers, but it was a lot more unknown folk. You know what I mean?
Well, I've only watched three episodes.
Me too.
Oh, so who did you know?
I
mean, they talk about Manson.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen him yet.
Like, I think we're going to get to Manson. Obviously,
yeah, yeah. But I didn't know the two guys that they interviewed in episode three.
I didn't either. But you know what I mean? Like, they're clearly getting more into BTK.
Yeah. But honestly, I barely had heard of BTK before last season of Mindhunter.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I was very familiar with BTK because they, you know, he got caught. It wasn't that long ago that he got caught. So
when was it?
Well, now I'm going to look that up. But I want to say it was like the late 90s, I feel like.
Okay. I'm not a huge like serial killer guy. That it's become very popular to know about serial killers, but I don't know. I don't follow that stuff that great. I know the names of the big ones, but like not any real information.
2005. He was arrested in 2005.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's surprising that I didn't know more, but I don't really remember that.
It was a pretty big deal at the time.
I'm sure it was. I'm not doubting that. Yeah, I don't remember it.
Yeah, you know, no worries. You know, I do think it's also interesting to sort of watch this, you know, watch the interest in their work progress, you know? The little bit of time jump into the early 80s,
yeah,
I think has been used for really good effect. The lead performer.
What happened to Holden's girlfriend?
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like that's been addressed very much.
No, I might forget something that happened at the end of last season, I guess, but I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely needed flashback. Like the catch up,
yeah.
The recap.
Yeah, totally.
And you know what? Here's my free pro tip for Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. You should. I really feel like, you know, there's enough technology between these three that you ought to be able to make a thing where you could just hit a button at any point. You know what I mean? Like, at any point in the season, and it dial up previously on whatever show you're watching. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that you could have it when you want it, not have it when you don't want it. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't seem like it would be that hard for them to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You know, especially the way that people come in and out of these shows, and then it would be stickier, right? Like, it'd be easier for you to join up something mid-thing if you could watch a...
Not just how many people come in and out, but how much TV there is. Like, people are overwhelmed.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember what happened last season on Mindhunter when I've watched 400 episodes of television since.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a big gap, right, between the releases of these things.
Yeah.
You know?
And totally.
Only so much room in the brain.
It's a great pro tip for Netflix.
Yeah. Seriously, put me in charge, Netflix. I'm ready.
That might not be as good of a pro tip.
Might.
Hey man, I don't know. You're a manager. You have skills. Don't sell yourself short. You might be able to do that.
I like that. You were tearing me down and building me up right there. That was good. So yeah, I'm really excited about the season. I think the three leads are all really compelling. I like that there's a little bit more Bill Tench so far in this season than we've had before.
We talked about him last season, and I just love that actor, man.
Yeah,
Holt
McElhaney?
McElhaney, yeah. I just love that he got this big, meaty role. You know, a guy who's really, in my memory, mostly only had the opportunity to play like lunkhead military people, basically.
Yeah. He's got a huge head.
He's got the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a long head.
Square head, man. He looks like a Marine, but I think that's what's so effective when he delivers this performance is like, he does look like a Marine and he is an FBI agent, but there's so many layers and so much subtlety to what he's doing here and who that character is as a person. It's great. He's great. Yeah. He's great. And I love Anatorv since Fringe. So, you know, Again, this is another one where I have no complaints. I think everybody's great. I think it's super interesting from a philosophy perspective. I mean, they too get in, like, somehow this show is dealing with the neglected murder of black children.
Yeah, that was that was another thing we were talking about.
Certainly, it's not topical.
It's not so much a famous serial killer, but it's a super, the Atlanta Child Murders is a really famous case. There've been, a few shows and things about it now. And I was really glad. I was glad to see it sort of, if they're going to cover famous cases, I was glad to sort of see that one included. But I was also, I thought the way that they did it was really interesting, and at least for where we are, it's not really done yet. Right. So who knows exactly where that's going to go?
Yeah. Who knows if it'll even come back around. But I thought it was both really, they did a really good job of honoring those victims, but also of showing how even a well-intended officer of the law might fail to help that community,
Yeah.
I thought that was really powerful. Like, this show, man, it works on a lot of levels.
Yeah, it's really thoughtful. It's superbly executed television.
Yeah, this is a show that we had that conversation about GLOW and what are the 8 shows. Well, this is one of them. This is a better show than GLOW, as much as I love GLOW. Like, this is Netflix at its absolute best.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love GLOW.
Me too. I love GLOW. But, like, it's like I love Seinfeld, and I love How I Met Your Mother, and I love You're the Worst. And they're all different and spectacular in their own ways, and none of them are The Wire.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
This is The Wire on Netflix.
We should say, and look, I'm not worried about a drop-off in quality because we watch plenty of non-Fincher-directed episodes of the show at this point. But Fincher does direct the 3 that we've seen and no more this season. So,
yeah, and that's fine. That's more or less what he did last year, right?
He did the first 2 and then the last 1 last year. Yeah. The last 2.
So again, like, I think last year they did not struggle at all to capture his aesthetic throughout the series. So I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, he seems like the type, he's not just going to let somebody come in and be like, all right, cool, I'll see him when I'm back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is
not that I know that firsthand, but at least from what I hear about him.
It's still a Fincher property, and it doesn't feel like he's going to be too hands-off on one of his properties.
Yeah, I'd say that's correct. I wish I did more stuff, frankly.
But, man, we keep bumping into this. And boy, does it say a lot about America. But show me the great director who's not taking his time or her time between movies.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Between projects.
All my favorites are, with maybe the exception of Danny Boyle. Like, I feel like Danny Boyle cranks out a lot of stuff.
Yeah, okay. And he's definitely had a bit of a surge over the last few years, it feels like.
And I'll also say that of the group of those kind of directors that I think we really love, he's probably the most uneven of those, right?
Yes, here's the thing, man. He has made a total of 13 films since 1994, So 25 years, 13 films. And he's been more or less every other year since 2010. Like, it's not all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as TV,
I mean, he did drop a couple of TV shows in the middle of that.
Yeah, he directed Trust, and he directed a 2017 show I'd never heard of called Alternativity. Yeah. Wow. And then something in 2014, a British comedy. But those things are short.
I need to see this Alternativity thing. Apparently, it's written by Banksy.
I guess Banksy wrote a play. Yeah.
I'd never heard of this before. But
again, that was just like an hour-long film on TV. He's not And that's, we're talking about the guy who feels the busiest of the directors and that we really like.
Yeah.
You know? So I think this is a lesson to us. As much as we want more and more and more, what it is, it's a lesson to the business that the way to get more and more and more is to let different and different and different people produce it.
Yeah, man.
Not to find people who can churn out mediocrity with regularity.
Let the chefs cook, as the kids say.
Yeah, let the good chefs cook and try new chefs instead of like Aramark.
Is like Chuck Lorre your Aramark? Is that what you're saying?
Kind of. Although even Chuck Lorre might be the best example, because he Chuck Lorre is the victor of the television system. Okay, he won television by not, I don't know if gaming the system is fair, but by like playing it a certain way and playing it for cash. You know?
Yeah.
And that's, it's, you know, I don't like most of the product, but it's hard for me to criticize his approach. But when he is given time and the ability to be considered, he made a great show on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the point. Let Chuck Lorre Kaminsky, and then let artists cook and like just keep showing 2.5 Men reruns for all the old people who are going to die soon.
Didn't Chuck Lorre also make like The Ranch or maybe was that show about getting high? What was it that we talked about for like, what was
that? Yeah, and that was awful. The Kathy Bates show?
Yeah, it was bad. You know, I'm interested to see what Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy do when they wind up in Netflix and have some time.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, both of them are Ryan Murphy. I think we know what he's going to do, right?
Look, we know Ryan Murphy has a fairly established aesthetic. You're right. It may not change a whole lot.
I think Shonda Rhimes is more interesting because she has clearly been making network TV.
Yes. You know? She also has an aesthetic, but I think it's clearly designed to fit within the confines of network TV. And that
exactly. She colored within the lines and did so very successfully, but I don't think we know as much about what she'll do without the lines. Ryan Murphy has never really paid attention to the lines.
Yeah.
He does what he wants. And I think it works really well sometimes and not as well other times for me. But I think we have an idea of what sort of show we'll get.
Yeah. Now I'm having that realization that September is almost here.
And TV's coming.
Yeah, and we're going to be inundated with you know, how much of this network TV stuff do we need to look into?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's going to be so much.
Honestly, when are we ever rewarded by that?
It's pretty rare.
What's our success story on that?
I'm having trouble coming up with it now.
Yeah.
At least in terms of, you know, look, there have obviously been some things on network TV that we have enjoyed, like The Good Place. You know what I mean?
You know what? That's a good one. That's an example.
But I think that was the thing that we were just going to watch, right? It wasn't like we were like, well, let's see what's up with network TV. We're going to check out The Good Place.
That's true. Nothing. It did not surprise us. We expected greatness from The Good Place because we knew the creator and the actors.
Yeah. By the way, September 26th, that's when that comes back.
Oh, man, I'm so excited.
I think that, you know what I mean? Like, I think in terms of like just a, hey, let's random check in, like maybe like The Good Doc. The Good Doctor, right? That was about as good as it got, I feel like, for like just a, hey, let's watch this thing.
Yeah, with the kid on the spectrum who was a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Yeah, and that's about your ceiling is, yeah, it wasn't bad.
But I don't think either of us watched a single episode after we talked about it on the show.
Nope, have not returned to it. Have not.
Yeah. You know. So there you go.
It's, yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is I don't know that I have time for that this year.
No.
I don't know that I have time for like a sampling of mediocre network television just to do it.
Yeah, no. Although I will say there's a Colby Smulders PI show that
I've subjected to during preview. And during I do enjoy Colby Smulders, so...
Yeah, and it seems like this is definitely, they're definitely letting her, like, let it all hang out. So I was sort of like,
Yeah, all right, maybe we'll watch an episode or two of that one.
And there's a Lake Bell Dax Shepard show that people actually sort of seem to like that we've never talked about, and I feel like maybe.
So here we are. We've talked ourselves into it again. Should be fun. Here, we're off to watch network TV.
it's going to happen. That's what I'm saying. It's going to happen. So
yeah,
just be ready.
You're right.
Just be ready.
You're right.
All right. You ready to get to homework? Because we've
I am.
We have a fair amount of stuff on the agenda.
Yeah. I feel like we've been keeping the pod at like a tight 50, which I feel good about.
Yeah. We're actually about to cross the 50-minute mark right now as we say this. So
I have a great sense for these things.
I am excited to check out a new Showtime series that premieres on Sunday called On Becoming a God in Central Florida.
Yeah.
It's a Kristen Dunst, I believe Alexander Skarsgård joint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about telemarketing, which I think looks interesting. So we're going to do that. There's a new Dave Chappelle special dropping on Monday on Netflix.
Very interested in that.
So, yeah, I mean, of course, we're watching that. Yeah. And then I wrote down The Letdown, but I've already forgot. Oh, that's your show. Tell us about The Letdown. That's why I don't remember what it is.
The Letdown is a Australian show about more or less about new parents that my wife is very insistent upon me watching. So I figured I would make you watch it too, and we'll see what we see.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm in for that. And then we're going to do some music too, Sleater Kinney. And then did you want to, are we doing Little Brother as well?
You know, yeah. Why don't you, I mean, I've already listened to it 5 times and it came out yesterday. So
of course, yeah. And then you're going to be like, yeah, do it.
Yeah. And honestly, I would almost say you should go back and at least give one listen to their, I would say, seminal album, The Minstrel Show.
I hear you, and maybe I'll do that afterwards, but I feel like I'd rather come to this from a fresh perspective, especially since you're already coming into it from the I Know Them perspective. You know what I mean? So,
okay.
I might go back after and do that.
Okay, but then be aware there are some skits and inside jokes that will not connect.
Well, it's kind of like you watch BH90210. You know what I mean?
Yes. But just don't get annoyed by skits that seem potentially senseless because they are not.
I mean, I think we've established a pattern with me that I am typically annoyed by skits on a rap album regardless. So I, you
well,
know.
But these are, see, the that's why I mean, these are thoughtful, smart skits.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
But they won't, these ones kind of don't make sense without, anyway, whatever.
I'm going to let you in a little secret. I'm going to skip the skits. So.
Okay, that's fine. So I think you hopefully will quite enjoy this album. Little Brother is classic sounding. I don't know how much they're still sampling, really, because of legal stuff, but it has that 90s, the very melodic 90s hip hop sound, a lot of great piano sounds, and you know, you're going to love it.
All right.
Really smart lyrics. A couple dudes from North Carolina who. And Fonte, who is one of the rappers in Little Brother, part of the reason they haven't made an album for 9 years, I think, is that he is very busy writing and producing stuff, I want to say. But I don't have good stories.
Yeah, that's all right. Look them up for next week.
That in front of me.
I would say the Sleater Kinney record. I love Sleater Kinney, but I have some trepidation about this record. I did not enjoy the single that came out in front of it. It's produced by St. Vincent, which should all of that should be magic. But
yeah, that I am interested in the description right up until the point where you don't like the single.
Yeah, it's a little weird. And then, you know, I mean, there's the whole thing about Janet Weiss, you know, left the band like a month before the album cycle started, which is, you know, not the best sign. So
true.
So yeah, but the reviews have been pretty good, and although it's also sort of hard to imagine a Sleater-Kinney record not getting good reviews from rock critics.
Right. It's an interesting. I have no problem. I like Sleater-Kinney fine, but I do think they're an overloved indie band.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
like I think they're good, but they have this. There's some indie bands in this territory for like Yola Tango, you know, they're good. I get it, but they have this sort of mythical status where I don't feel like they'll ever get a bad review.
Yeah, no, they're somewhat bulletproof from critics. You know, I feel like
Sleater-Kinney, Yola Tango, like
Sonic Youth,
there's a group of bands that are in that zone.
Yeah. It's kind of like Mr. Skin reviewing like True Blood or something, right? You know what I mean? Like he can't help himself,
right?
You know,
right? Yeah, like you pressed all the right buttons, so like you get a good review, whether it's actually good or great or not.
Indeed. All right, I think that pretty much wraps it up for us, right?
Yeah. I don't want to be abrupt, but bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.